Brian Hayes joins us here from TSN at 1050. Brian, how you doing?
Hey, boys. I'm doing well.
Good. What are people doing on an off day for the Jays in Toronto?
I don't know, man. I've been trying to figure that out all day. I was talking about it on my show. It's a very empty feeling. I'm itching for a game. It says something, too, about the emotions of the Blue Jay fan base where, you know, no baseball fan can claim that they're underserved when it comes to games. I mean, these guys, they play 162 times a year, and they have, like, very few off days. And here's one of them tonight. And I'm, like, disappointed. I'm, like, rattled. I feel like I'm cheated because there isn't a game. I think a lot of Jays fans feel the same way. And that might be the biggest difference this year compared to the past 22 years where, you know, this time last August, I was itching for a break. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't want to watch them play because they were so disappointing. Now they're on fire. They're atop the AL East. They have an off night, and I feel cheated. I'm a little bit bummed out.
Well, I can just watch all the highlights of the runs they scored against the Angels last series, though.
That's
might take up 3 hours.
Yeah, I'm a pathetic loser. I'm not going to deny that. I will likely just watch all of the highlights from the weekend.
There you go. Like, you talked about how, you know, the last few years they've kind of built this team up at the start of the year, and then they've fallen off. This year, obviously, completely different. What's it been for the fans? The true fans of this team have been waiting for this, and everybody else has jumped on the bandwagon, haven't they?
Yeah, there's certainly been a lot of people jumping on the bandwagon, but I don't think you can blame them for that because of what you just pointed out and what I pointed out. It's 22 years of failure, 22 years of ineptitude. It was difficult to captivate people. How do you captivate someone with a 74-win season like they had a few years ago or an 83-win season like they had last year where ultimately you knew they weren't going to be playing into October and they were more than likely going to be playing meaningless games in September and into late August. So it was a difficult sales pitch, so I didn't blame people for the apathy. I didn't blame people for avoiding, you know, the bandwagon, so to speak. And I embrace the bandwagoners. I embrace them. That adds to the buzz. People can jump on. They should jump on. Anyone, you know, that's a hardcore fan, that's disappointed or is disparaging bandwagon fans, give it a rest. I mean, this is what we've been waiting for. This is what you want, 45,000 plus at the Rogers Center. You know, 1.5 million, 1.7 million throughout the country watching these games on TV. I embrace the bandwagon. I say jump on board. I certainly feel good for the diehards, you know, the fans that have been really tuned in and locked in for a long time. They deserve this. So I feel good for them. I feel good for the younger crowd. There's been a lot of jealousy in this city for about 20 years because, mm-hmm. you know, if you're under the age of 35, you've heard your parents or your uncles or your cousins or your coworkers talk about how great it was in the late 80s, in the early 90s, and you never got to experience that. If you're 25 or 27 or 30, they're just stories. You know, it didn't mean anything. You don't remember them winning in 85. You don't remember George Bell winning an MVP in 87, them winning the World Series in 92 and 93. You might have brief memories, but nothing substantial. So I feel very good for the diehards, the old school diehards, and I feel very good for a large young fan base who has never experienced this before and I think has been envious of the older fan base for quite some time.
Brian Hayes from TSN 1050 joining us, talking the Blue Jays. They sweep the Angels this weekend in California. If there are any questions that Josh Donaldson was a legit MVP contender, were those squashed with his performance this weekend?
If they weren't, I don't know what the issue would be. I mean, I don't think there was really any reason to debate it prior to this weekend, but I think he put a stamp on this race this weekend, and I think it coincided with Mike Trout struggling again. I mean, Mike Trout is having a pretty awful month of August, not only by his own standards, but by the average baseball player's standards. He's really not supplying much offense, and the team continues to fade. The Angels are now out of a wild card spot. But Josh Donaldson has been absolutely outstanding all year. He's been great for the past couple of years. I mean, this would not surprise, you know, baseball purists or diehard baseball fans. He did this, you know, the past 2 years in Oakland. Now he's in a hitter's park. He's in a hitter's division in the American League East. And he's been consistent since day one. And you look at the impact he had on this series this weekend, absolutely incredible. He's locked in. I don't think it's going to slow down. And I think the MVP race is another one that will be, you know, right down to the final stretch, I think the final week or two. And the deciding factor may end up being which team makes the playoffs because, you know, depending on how you feel about it, and it's so arbitrary how people vote on the MVP, how you define an MVP, their stats are very similar. You know, Mike Trout is an outstanding player, putting up big numbers, August notwithstanding, but I believe he'll break out of this slump and he'll get going again. between now and the end of the season. And Donaldson, the same thing. I mean, their WAR, their wins above replacement, are very close. Their sabermetrics numbers are very close. Their old school numbers are very close. So it may come down to who actually ends up on the better team and the more successful team. So I think, you know, Donaldson clearly made a big statement this weekend as an MVP candidate and maybe taking the lead in that conversation, but his team helped him as well because they embarrassed the Angels. I mean, the Blue Jays destroyed them. They embarrassed them in Anaheim. And if the Jays continue on this pace and they end up winning the AL East and the Angels continue to fade and miss the playoffs, that could be the deciding factor in this. And if that's the case, then we could have an MVP here in Toronto.
I know Jose Bautista's had some good seasons the last 5 years, and Roy Halladay had some magical seasons with the Jays in the early 2000s, but is Josh Donaldson now the best Blue Jay player this millennium?
I think you could make that case for sure. I think it also coincides with the team that he's on and the fact that they're winning. You know, I do think winning factors in, even when you try to focus it solely on the individual player, the individual impact, and the individual statistics. I don't think that's the way, you know, a sports fan's mind actually reacts to these kind of things. He's got a lot of things going for him, including the fact that his team is so good and there's so much buzz surrounding him. I mean, Bautista, I guess in 2010 it would have been when he hit 54 home runs. I mean, that was an unbelievable season, and it was a season that really came out of nowhere because no one had ever heard of Jose Bautista before, for the most part, when they picked him up via waivers or a waiver trade with Pittsburgh back in the day. You've got Halladay, and he won the Cy Young, I believe, in 03. That was truly an impactful season. But, yeah, I think you could certainly make the case. I think it would be down to those three. Delgado had a couple of big years. Vernon Wells had a couple of big years. But it probably would be Halladay in 03, Bautista in 09, 2010, and then Donaldson this year. And I think, again, if this team continues to play like this and he continues to mash the way that he is, by the end, some people may look at it and say, this is the best individual season of any Blue Jay player since, you know, the early 90s.
Brian Hayes at TSN 1050 joining us here looking at the Jays. And they make all those moves at the deadline. You know, the bats have always been there. What's been the biggest change? Has defense been that much better? Is all the pitching just improved because David Price there? What's been the biggest change in your mind?
I think it's the perception of the pitching. I don't think you can throw shade, though, at the defensive proficiency over the past few weeks. This team is very fundamentally strong. You know, they did not play fundamentally strong baseball last season, the year before, certainly not, and even early into this season. But their defense has really picked up. Ryan Goins, Troy Tulowitzki, clearly, Ben Revere, Kevin Pillar has been a huge find for them, and Russell Martin behind home plate. So I think defense has played a big part in that. But I think it's the perception of the pitching, where that was always the concern. Everyone knew the offense was going to be there. It was always a question of whether or not they could get there with this staff. And what has changed over the past 3 or 4 weeks has been the phenomenal pitching. And really, that's what it's been. They've probably had the best staff in the American League for the past 3 or 4 weeks. The stats would indicate that. And this is another weekend where you could point to that, where clearly the offense was incredible. And there's more flash there. There's more excitement that comes with watching them hit the way that they did. But on Friday night, Price was an absolute magician again. Marco Estrada pitched really well on Saturday, even though they didn't really need him to. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think he went out there in the fourth inning. His team was up 10-0. All he had to do was just cruise, and he did. But he's been a big find for them this year. And then you look at yesterday with R.A. Dickey, where he gets rocked in the first inning, and he didn't have his stuff. You know, his ball wasn't knuckling. I think there were some debates out there in the Twitter sphere, myself included, that maybe Gibbons would go to the bullpen in the second inning or even pull him at some point in the first inning as he continued to struggle. But that was not the case. He got out of the first, and not only did he get out of the first, he went on to pitch a scoreless, you know, second through sixth inning. So I think it's the arms that has really, really put them in a different position where they realize they can win series with pitching, or they can win games with pitching. Again, they didn't really need it this weekend, but it was there anyway. You look back a couple of weeks ago, their series at Yankee Stadium, that was the arms. The offense didn't really show up a couple of weeks ago down in New York. It was the pitching that really supplied that three-game sweep of the Yankees. So I think it's the perception of the pitching, the stats that they're putting up, and the confidence that has really changed the DNA of this team and really changed the confidence that really is percolating through the fan base at this point.
As we wrap up here with Brian Haynes, let's change focus here a little bit to the Argos. I don't know if anybody's paying much attention to the Argos right now, but they're 6-2, pretty good start considering they spent all the time on the road. And, of course, here in Edmonton, everybody's talking about James Franklin, now the starting quarterback for the Eskimos. Are the Argos on the radar at all right now?
No, not really. I mean, it's not an Argos town anymore. It's not, and the Blue Jays aren't helping that because you're right. In terms of being a good story, this might be the best story in the CFL. I think most would argue the Saskatchewan story is probably the biggest story of the CFL, maybe what's going on in Montreal. But you've got a backup quarterback here with the Argos, and they're playing all these games on the road, and they're 6-2. You know, Ricky Ray hasn't taken a snap yet, and they're on fire in the East. Their schedule, their travel has been crazy already, and it should be a feel-good story. It is a feel-good story. I think when the dust settles with the Blue Jays in a month and a half, 2 months, people might snap out of it and focus on where the Argos are at that point towards the end of the season. But it's just not a CFL town anymore. It's not an Argos town. It was in the 80s. It was well before that, and even to a certain extent in the early 90s. But it just doesn't move the needle anymore. You know, I do 4 hours of radio here in Toronto, and I very rarely talk about the Argos, partially because I'm not the biggest CFL guy myself. I'll admit to that. I always have. But it just is not something that has a huge urge behind it. You know, there just is not a massive fan base here pushing for Argos talk. And it's too bad because they've got a great history, a very good team, a very good story. I think at some point it will get the attention. But at this point, it's all Jays all the time.
Great stuff. Brian Haynes from TSN 1050. Appreciate the time as always, Brian. Thanks.
Thank you, guys.